Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Barack Obama, Bill Clinton and Joe Biden are expected to address next week's Democratic National Convention in what will be a pivotal week for Kamala Harris. The jamboree starts on Monday with the wind firmly in the sails of the US vice president as she seeks to pull off a previously unlikely victory over Donald Trump in November's US presidential elections. Graham Finley, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD, is here to preview the convention, the DNC. What can we expect, Graham?
Well, one of the striking things about the Democratic National Convention is we don't know much about the lineup, except for speakers like ex-presidents, as you just said. And so we can sort of speculate. But what we can expect is them trying to maintain the narrative of hope, positivity, which has characterized the Harris-Walz campaign and is in many ways the sort of flip side of the much darker campaign Joe Biden was running before he was ousted or asked to leave, because you know, it allows them to pose Donald Trump and J.D. Vance as a threat to freedom, as a threat to people's reproductive rights, as a threat to Medicare and so forth, Obamacare, but turn it into a message of this is what we're going to do for you. This is the freedom we want to preserve. And it allows her to run on Joe Biden's record without being tied to it.
A good keynote address at these conventions is absolutely crucial. I was in Boston in 2004 when the then previously unheard of state senator for Chicago, Barack Obama, addressed the convention. He electrified the entire party and energized a rather moribund campaign of John Kerry's at that point in time. So will they be looking to try and replicate something like that?
They've been trying to replicate it ever since. I mean, I think hopefully one thing everyone will take away from Barack Obama's speech is brevity, because Obama's speech was 20 minutes long. In our current news cycle, people just can't handle the really long acceptance speeches we saw from Bill Clinton in 1992 and from Donald Trump just recently at the Republican National Convention. It was the longest convention speech in history, 90 minutes long,
speech.
91 minutes long. I mean,
you use that word in the loosest sense.
He was speaking, you know, and his own partisans were sort of being turned off because Americans watch the conventions. It's kind of hard to believe when you look at how long some of the speeches are. They especially watch the coverage and the spin of it, who's represented, who isn't. And a really good speech can really, really help you and your party. And so I think we're going to see a lot of the rising stars of the party, Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan, Josh Shapiro, who's doing kind of an Obama tribute act from Pennsylvania, but also senatorial candidates like Ruben Gallego in Arizona, who are outpolling Harris-Walz in the state, and a state which they very badly need to win.
Back to the duration thing, though. If you know that your preferred news outlet is not going to break away from your speech, why would you only speak for 15 or 20 minutes if you know that they're going to stick with you for 2 hours?
I just think, you know, you can really lose the room. Bill Clinton was famous for being a very good sort of in-person campaigner, but his speeches were dull because he would give you the whole laundry list of policy ideas which were in the actual platform. Mm. Now, the platforms are not as important as they used to be. They're much briefer and shorter than they used to be. Republicans didn't even have a platform in 2020. It was whatever Donald Trump was going to do was the platform. But they are potential sources of division within the party, and they tend to be sort of the kind of aspirational stuff which makes for shorter convention speeches, where you express a commitment to freedom. You don't go on and on about particular line item tax breaks you're going to give to working families.
I know. It is ironic, though, isn't it, that in the wake of that speech by Barack Obama in 2004, he and I think it was his lieutenant, Rahm Emanuel, admitted that, you know, they hadn't really thought this one through, that he was just delivering his pretty standard stump speech, and they walked away from Boston going, can you believe that they lapped that stuff up?
Well, again, biography is really, really important. He has a great biography. He's a great speaker. He had a great story to sell. This is what they're going to be selling in the convention. Like I said, they've got policies. They're going to be giving Walz's biography, Kamala Harris's biography. And they're going to be telling the stories of all the people who are coming to speak. And that kind of symbolism is really more important than any detail.
Now, this is a key and crucial issue, isn't it? This idea of biography and getting to know the candidate. Because there is a suggestion in the polls that Kamala Harris's bump to the point where she is in some places outstripping Donald Trump comes from people knowing that they find her more acceptable as the DN, as the Democratic candidate than Joe Biden, but not knowing that much about her. She is a standard issue boilerplate Democrat Party candidate right now. And maybe the more they get to know her, they might not be so keen.
Sure. If she's a West Coast liberal, you know, who's now from Oakland, you know, which is a much more sort of working class, sort of maybe African-American identified city than San Francisco. She was a very, very good senator. She was a good interrogator in Senate committee meetings and things like that. She didn't do particularly well when she ran for president in her own right 4 years ago.
Which is a good thing. There's not too many hostages to fortune left around because she wasn't in the campaign for too long.
She's actually resiled from a lot of the positions which might put off Pennsylvania voters, like being for a fracking ban, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the polls suggested that voters wanted a younger candidate than Trump and Biden, that they wanted someone who didn't have the baggage of Trump and Biden, and they got it. Now, I mean, we're talking about a new generation of Democrats and a younger candidate who's 59, but that's politics in America for you. And she really gave people what they want. One Republican strategist says about the floundering Trump campaign is they're the dog that caught the car. You know, they hammered Joe Biden to the point where, you know, he's out of the race and they're confronted by someone they don't have that much on. I mean, the Democrats have kept Kamala Harris under wraps, partly because of the abuse, the sexist and racist abuse she would get from the extreme right whenever she did anything, and partly because she didn't have the same sort of presence or history that Biden had. But at the same time, this means that Trump and Vance are struggling not to drive up their own unfavorability and negatives by going back to that racist and sexist abuse, by calling her a DEI hire, or by talking about how she's, you know, a cat lady, or, yeah, you know, and things
all,
like
all
that.
Of which does appear to be backfiring on them. But there is also a sense, is there perhaps, that the Democrats are conscious that the more you see somebody, the more you see of the policy, their policies, the more you will find to disagree with.
Well, that is why the platform is extremely centrist. They've taken out any kind of language which would suggest that they're communists who want to take over the U.S. healthcare system, like talking about Medicare for all or something like that. They're actually just suggesting more taxes on billionaires to fund more child tax credits for working families, more better access to Social Security, better access to healthcare, better access to education, canceling medical debt, canceling student debt. I mean, it's all sort of more money in your pocket kind of stuff, which is not going to, you know, portray them as radical liberals. Tim Walz has a governing record where he's achieved progressive goals, which makes young people happy, but not governing from a progressive or a radical left point of view. So they don't have a lot to work with, the Republicans. People, the problem is this is such a short campaign, could really help Harris because the honeymoon could be sustained unless there's some kind of big cataclysmic surprise in October. Whereas people know what they're getting with Donald Trump, and the more they see of him, a lot of people don't like him.
Conventions are a magnet for protests. They usually create an entirely fenced off area which protests are funneled into. How though, because we can expect a very big Gaza protest at this convention, how do you think Democrats are going to handle that issue, or will they ignore it?
They can't ignore it, and they haven't ignored it. This is a huge issue. Now, normally foreign policy does not sway American voters in elections, but it, as we know from our own experience, you know, Gaza really matters to young people, the young voters who've been re-energized by the selection of Walz and by the selection of Harris. But also there are 30 uncommitted delegates in the convention who are inside the convention who could kick up quite a fuss on the convention floor. And these are delegates who were explicitly voted for by Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, and people who really care about Gaza and Palestine in absolutely key swing states like Minnesota, but especially Michigan, where there are more Arab American voters than the margin of victory Joe Biden
had. I thought that this had all been tied down, that this convention wasn't going to be contested in any way. But you're saying there's a few wild cards.
Well, there's only 30 delegates out of thousands. So it's not like Harris is going to have trouble, but they can kick up a literal noisy fuss on the floor. The Harris campaign and the Biden campaign before it has intensively reached out to these voters ever since the primaries, during the primaries, with absolutely senior Democratic figures, some of whom are Muslim American, to try and find out what they want. What they want is an embargo on arms sales to Israel, probably not going to happen. What they want is for maybe one of their leaders to have a major speaking slot in the convention. What they, there's a pediatric daughter, a doctor, Tanya Hassan, or what is it? Tanya Hassan, I've forgotten her name.
We'll fact check it, but go on.
But yeah, who has volunteered in Gaza, working with various children and under the worst conditions during the war. And they would like her to speak, to just tell about her actual actual experiences there. It's Haj Hassan, sorry. That is possible because as long as her speech is carefully scripted and she doesn't say anything which is going to alienate supporters of Israel or give the Republicans fire.
It could take the sting out of the room.
It could really make a lot of inroads into conciliatory moves towards those voters.
Graham Findlay, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.